What's happening, runners? Welcome back to another episode of the Trackster podcast, the podcast where we talk about everything running, the highs, the lows, the ugly bits, and of course, everything in between. My name is Lloyd. I'll be your host for today's episode. And today I'm sitting down and talking with NN Running and Nike professional athlete, Mark Scott. On today's show, we sit down with Mark and we run through everything from his recent engagement, where he's at with his training right now in the build to Seville Marathon, the switch from Bowman Track Club to NN Running, and much, much more. Now, if you do want to follow along with what we're doing at Trackster and this podcast, please do head over to Instagram and drop us a follow, and also check out our website, trackster.com. That's where we put all of our longer form content from our YouTube channel. And finally, if you'd like to support the show, please do leave us a review, which is now available on all platforms. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Mark Scott. All right, let's get into it. So Mark, welcome to the show, mate. How are we doing?
Yeah, thank you for having me. Things are going well. Obviously coming off the back of Liverpool at the weekend and moving forward, put the slight misery behind me, and we'll go on and get into some marathon specific training now and some road racing. So I'm excited for that.
I suppose I should start the conversation by saying congratulations. You are now engaged off the back of a fresh engagement. Talk to me about that, mate. Was you nervous when you popped the question?
Yeah, I was nervous. I had it planned. Didn't think I would be too nervous. But it's just there in the moment. You've built it up yourself and to a couple of people who you wanted to tell. So I was nervous, got it done, nice romantic setting in Dubai. It all went smoothly, all in all. So yeah, appreciate the congratulations as well.
It must have been a bit of a quick turnaround, Dubai into Liverpool. Is that the prep that you was expecting?
I probably should have come home a day earlier, looking back. I did look at changing the flights, but they just got super expensive. So came back on a Thursday, got in the car, big drive on the Friday, and then obviously raced on the Saturday. The legs and stuff didn't feel too bad. The biggest shock were the conditions. Obviously, I've not run on the mud since Cardiff, and then the weather, it was over 30 degrees every day, and it's still classed as a winter at the minute. So I didn't think it would be quite so hot for training, but I feel like I did some good stuff out there, and it did bring me on for Liverpool, but the conditions were just a little different. So no regrets, though. Was always in the plans to go there. My brother's moved out there, so we went to visit him. And just get some good hard training in the heat. Obviously, they say it's a poor man's altitude. Came back from Font and then went to Dubai, so kind of extended that simulation, really.
I was chatting to a few guys after Cardiff, between the Cardiff Cross and the Liverpool Cross, about preparing for cross-country races. Obviously, you went to the NCAA. You did a lot of cross-country racing out there. You've done cross-country racing over here as well. You've been successful in both. Are you an athlete that needs to do work on the grass, like sessions on the grass, to prepare for cross-country? Or do you think that you get fit enough by doing your standard sessions, whether it be on track, road, etc.?
I would like to think in the past I would get fit enough doing my normal sessions. But I don't think, with the conditions we're facing, Cardiff, Liverpool this year, I don't think you can get away from doing stuff on the grass. I think most of those top guys have all been doing stuff on the grass. You can see everything from Strava and whatever else these days. And those are the ones who seem to have the most success on the day. So yeah, I've not been on the grass. I've been on the grass twice, and that's the two races I've done. And obviously that clearly showed. And I think moving forward into the races I'm doing, you'll see a difference in me with the terrain I'm going to be racing on. So
yeah, I know that you've made it public that you're going to look to the roads, and you've already had success on the half marathon, and you're going to step up to the marathon. Where are you currently at with your training? Because off the back of Liverpool and Cardiff, I know you've had some injuries. Where's everything at right now?
Yeah, so even not making the team for the cross, it gives me an extra couple of weeks now, I feel like, for that marathon prep. At the minute, the goal is to do Seville as the main goal race. And then I've got a few. I'm going to do Telford in a couple of weeks' time. I've got Ribble Valley 10K planned at the end of the year. And then moving forward, I'll find a half and then, do hopefully commit and do Seville. That's the plan at the minute. So
you have the course record for Ribble Valley, am I right?
Yeah, you are right. I don't know quite. I think it's around 28, 30, something like that. I think it's pretty similar to the course record at Telford, around 28:32-ish, I think.
Yeah, they're like they're the two 10Ks around Christmas that are always well supported because they are so fast. And it's nice that you are doing sort of some homegrown races, if you like. And that's what brings me on to my next question. Previously, Bowman Track Club, now NN Running. And I know you've been training in Kenya, you've been in America for a long time, you've done some work back home as well. Like, where are you based now? What is your setup? Because I just feel like for your athletics, like, I have no idea at any point where you're at.
Yeah, it's been a bit like up and down and all over the place, kind of really. Because at one point I thought I was going to be going into the Kaptagat camp in Kenya. That's not come to fruition just yet, but we're still working out pieces there. Not for me to live over there by any means, just to go and do long camp stints there. But yeah, currently me and my fiance now, we're living just south of London near Gatwick Airport. That's where she's based and doing work out of. But it's a bit of a struggle in terms of all the little things which make an athlete, the treatment, the training partners, and like you can commute to do sessions and stuff, but you need a small commute. I feel like it's most ideal. And even getting to long run for me on a Sunday is like over 45, 50 minute drive to Swinley Forest to meet the guys and stuff like that. So we are in the midst of moving. We're going to be heading further up north. Location's not pinned down yet, but probably Birmingham will be the furthest south we're going to look at being based moving forward, just for in terms of us both being closer to family, and then just more for a training group based around me as well. So,
yeah, group is obviously so important. And I know that having a group atmosphere, that's kind of been part of your bread and butter as you've become a professional athlete at university, out in America. You know, we see these groups are just incredibly strong. The camaraderie between the group, when you was with Bowman as well, that strengthened the group. And then also harness that group mentality, but obviously in Africa, you know, the other side of the world. Yeah. We've chatted about the group, the importance of a group on this podcast quite a lot. And in the UK, I think that once you get to a certain level of ability, you actually do struggle to find a group that you can work with. So I suppose that all of a sudden your options are limited. But I think we've got obviously the hubs in Leeds, we've got Birmingham, some fantastic groups from, you know, Birmingham with the university. Is there sort of an ideal setup that you want? Is it something where you want, you know, athletes to just get you through the sessions, or are you looking for a sort of hybrid of a solid enough group, facilities that are going to do the job, treatment on your doorstep, etc.? Like, what's the ideal setup for someone as fast as yourself?
Yeah, for me, treatment is probably one of the biggest things. Just with the flurry of injuries I've had recently, and now going to chuck on some extra mileage and longer sessions, I feel like finding a good treatment setup for me. Obviously, I'm supported by British Athletics on the funding plan, so there is options there. But yeah, for me, treatment's number one. As much as I'd like 10 guys in a group, that's hard to find in the UK. It's not a common thing. A couple of guys and just a coach at the side of the track, because obviously I'm still self-coaching at the minute. I'm working with three of the guys at British Athletics, with Steve Vernon being the endurance coach, Chris Jones does strategy, race planning, things like that. And then I work closely with Andy Shaw as well for physiology. We're doing a lot of lactate testing and like altitude tents, things like that. So we're kind of using the three of them to guide my training at the minute. But it's just nice to have someone on the side of the track or on the bike next to you with a watch. And I think I would probably take that over a big bunch of training partners at the minute. But yeah, those are the two key things for me, just the treatment and someone coaching right on my doorstep pretty much.
What's the process of you coaching yourself? Because having influences that you've had in the past, you know, kind of so much experience in those coaches, how do you sit down? And so I know you coach yourself a little bit as well. How do you sit down and think, right, this is what I need to do, when for so many years maybe someone's done that for you?
Yeah, I feel like because I've had such good guidance over those years, and I know what worked well for me, it's pretty much just picking stuff which I've done in the past and I know I know helped me a lot and which I enjoy. Doesn't become a struggle to get out the door by any means. There's no day where I'm struggling to get out and not want to go training. So I feel that's a big thing for me. I've had some great like experienced coaches in the past, and they've known me well enough to know what works, and I've just kind of picked that, and then I'm getting little bits off Steve and off Andy Shaw, and who've also been around a lot of great people, and just putting that together, and yeah, just not overthinking it really, just getting it down and getting the miles in.
So joining NN Running, I mean, massive announcement for British Athletics. You know, we don't see many Brits head to that team. Obviously, the first we saw was Jake Smith, and then followed by yourself. What was it about NN that was appealing to you? You know, talk us through that whole time in your life.
Yeah, obviously we've mentioned that having a group for me and a setup was very beneficial, and that's something I didn't want to leave behind. And obviously they're the biggest, probably the biggest group in the world, and especially with me relocating from the US to come back to Europe, I wanted some sort of team environment, and I thought that was the best way of getting it, and that's kind of how that came about, me joining the team. And just at that time, the times the guys were running, Kipchoge, Bekele, it was like, why would you want to go anywhere else when you can have that set up? Fortunate enough to be able to join those guys, and yeah, that's pretty much, I was like, there's no other team I'd want to join.
NN Running seemed like a Manchester City, man, like just an absolute powerhouse in the game right now, where they're obviously supported by Nike, they've got other supporters as well. Was you surprised by the support that you do have access to, or was it kind of part and parcel? I'm a Nike athlete, it's the same old, same old.
Yeah, because at first I thought it was just a Nike kind of group, and they give you a bit of money on top and wear the vest sort of thing. But yeah, the business is actually pretty incredible, which Yoss has got going. Yeah, and all these extra partnerships and things we can benefit from, even like the camping cap to get, for example, it's all these little things which come together, which actually make it very impressive. And you can benefit from so many things than just wearing the NN vest.
You mentioned earlier in the chat about you coaching yourself, and you're lucky that you've had such great influences in the past and kind of helps you just set what you know has worked for you in the past. What are the things that you have learned from some of your coaches in the past, like Jeremy Schumacher, you know, legends in the game? What were the things that you've maybe almost forgotten because you've learned now growing up as an athlete from these influences?
Yeah, I feel like it's hard anyway. Just the hard work actually really accounts for a lot in this sport. And a lot of people think, oh, you can get by with kind of doing minimal, when it's, some people maybe can, but the majority, 99% of people can't in this sport. And that's something we were reminded of a lot by Jerry. It's like, it is going to be hard. Probably the hard, like it's hard as you pretty much make it. And that is really what drives you in this sport to become better and to achieve those results. And just all the small sacrifices you have to give up if you want to be the best. And sometimes you're like, oh, I don't need to do X or Y to achieve your goals. But it's pretty evident that a couple of weeks, a month goes by of missing a bit of gym or missing whatever it may be, and that actually really does put a dent in your performances. So it's just things like that, which Jerry was really good at reminding us about. Which actually, it goes a really long way.
So, Mark, you said that you're now going to change your focus to the roads. I suppose the question is, in the simplest terms, is why? Because you're so successful at the track from a British standpoint, but even a world-class standpoint as well, with 5,000 metres world-class level. What is it about the road that has drawn you in, and why now? Why at this stage of your career?
Yeah, I guess the easiest thing, the first thing, is money. Yeah, I've got a good Nike contract and things like that, but I think there's a lot more potential to make more money on the roads based off what I've done kind of in kind of the times I've run on the back of a track season, I thought if I give it a bit more attention and focus, try and see what we can run, it opens a lot more doors in the future and for big appearance fees and things like that. So that was one factor. And then secondly, I noticed that the game on the track was just moving on a lot. Every Diamond League's a 12:45. If you're not in 13-minute shape or better, you're getting left behind, and your opportunities are just you go with a pace and you blow up and run 13:30, or you're going to run a huge PB. So I just felt like, have I quite reached? Maybe I've reached my ceiling on the track running 12:57. There might be a little more. But I'm just coming off, like, I had obviously a terrible final year on the track, and just with the three big championships, the Worlds, Europeans and Commie Games all coming at once and all not going great. I just kind of wanted a bit of change of stimulus. And I just know the track work is very hard to do in the UK on your own, all this specific 5K, 10K stuff. Whereas I had to lead one rep in the past for a 10 mile session with the guys, and a specific speed session, whatever, on the track, I'm leading one rep and you've got 10 guys pulling you through. And that is very difficult to do in the UK, which is why I think we've not seen many standards from the guys based over here at the minute. So two things, yeah. Wanted a change of stimulus, and the money was a thing as well.
Yeah, that's cool answers, man, because it gives us good insight. I've got a lot of friends that are road runners of good level, and they talk about the money all the time. And it comes from sort of different avenues. You've got your appearance fees, you've got your contract bonuses, etc. But I didn't actually realize the money that events do pay people to just turn up and stand on the start line and get over the first 10 meters. And it's insane.
The thing, yeah, that is the thing. I think people don't realize until they actually do it, and they think a couple of these races will be the same as my current contract, for example, for some people. And that's a big thing when there's not a lot of money floating around in the sport. I think it is getting better, but it's just not where it probably needs to be. You can make more in one race than you can some people on the whole Diamond League circuit for the whole season. So that is another thing as well.
So when the marathon beckons, and when it does happen, whether it's going to happen in Seville and that's going to be your best ever one, or it's going to be years down the line, you've got to be surely having one eye on that British record, Mo Farah's British record. Is that something that you look at and you think, like, I'm a 12:57 5K guy. Like, I know I can do this one day.
One day, yeah. It's not at the forefront of my mind, because I know that a lot can go wrong in a marathon without even doing one. First thing first, I want to get that Olympic standard nailed down. And if I have a good debut, then yeah, I feel like I have the resources in the marathon to look ahead and go for a British record like Mo's. So yeah, definitely in the future. Who knows what the first one will bring, and then we'll probably go from there. And yeah, but it's in the back of my mind, definitely.
And when you look at your running sort of toolkit, if you like, what strengths do you think you have that you think, do you know what, I think I can run a good marathon because I'm really good at X?
Yeah, for me, it's because I've done years and years of long, like, endurance, hard aerobic running. Starting out from when I was at university at Tulsa, we didn't really do any speed work there. We didn't ever touch on that, and the longer reps came pretty natural to me. And then that fed me into Bowerman, which is pretty much the same system. They do obviously do a lot more speed work than we did at Tulsa, but the long, hard aerobic running, miles, 2 miles, like big 20 miles on a weekend on a Sunday at altitude, I feel like I was pretty well suited to that sort of running, and kind of being uncomfortable for a long period of time, I thought one day I want to do a marathon and give it a good crack. And that's kind of where it's come from, just years of good strong running, which I feel like will translate really well.
So how are you going to attack the marathon training? What's your sort of philosophy? Because we see, I mean, the whole world at the moment is caught up on this double threshold thing from, I mean, it's been around for decades, but obviously it's very prominent at the moment. But I've spoken to a few of the Australian athletes that kind of do two sessions a week and then like a hard long run. Other athletes do three sessions a week. How are you going to go about it?
Yeah. For me, and a setup which Jerry would do with his athletes, one big session a week and one kind of harder long run with a session in it, and then just fill the rest of the week with miles, and then probably a medium long as well. So I don't feel the need for probably two sessions. I think if I get one good quality one in, let's say that would be on a Wednesday, medium long Friday, then we'd go long on a Monday or a Sunday or a Monday. I feel like that's enough quality in there for me to reduce injury risk rather than doing two big sessions. And then you're getting a good two good long stimulus in as well. So like I said, just pack the rest of the week with some easy running and good mileage. Then I think that's the way I'll go about things.
So I know you're still building up your training and no doubt you're not at your peak volume yet, but can you give us an insight into what training looks like for you right now?
Yeah, just at the minute, like I mentioned, with these 10K races, I'm doing longer sessions. Like even today, example, I've got 15 by a K on the road with a minute rest. So that's my session today. I ran 20-mile long run on Monday coming off the race at Liverpool. Just to reduce injury risk, I don't long run on the Sunday. I take the Sunday easy and then I put the long run on Monday. So on Monday, I did 20 with the first 9 miles outside in the cold, and then my last, I did a mile warm up on the treadmill, jumped straight onto the treadmill, easy mile, and then I did 10 progressives from 6 flat down to 5:05. So that was 20 for Monday. I'll have that session today. And then this week, I'll just be long run again on Sunday. So this week, for example, 20 miles of the Monday, I'll have 18:19 on Sunday. So there's two good long stimulus already, and then with the session in the middle. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'll probably look to be 90-95 miles this week, and then just keep gradually building from there into Telford and then into the new year. So that's just where I'm at right now.
And what's your, yeah, you know, in terms of like fueling, sort of marathon fueling with gels and drinks, have you done much of that in the past, whether it was when you was doing 5K, 10Ks or whatever, or is that still something you're ironing out?
Well, I was supposed to make my debut a long time ago in the marathon, but obviously injury set that back. But I've done a lot of fueling in the past, not with Bowman, just all since I left, but I was practicing 2-3 times a week. Anything over like an hour's run, I was practicing fueling, just stashing bottles, getting someone on the bike, and doing that. And obviously on training camps, it's a lot easier with someone on the bike coming along and just passing it around. So, but I've done a lot of that in the past. And British Athletics actually got me set up at one of the hubs, Leeds Beckett. I did a fueling testing day. So it was a 90-minute treadmill test. I did 30 minutes at 6 flat, and then 30 minutes at 5:30 miling, and 30 minutes at 5 flat miling. That's not even, none of that's even at marathon pace yet. Obviously, we're looking at 4:52, 4:53 for that Olympic standard. So, but we did some testing in there with fueling.
So
and
fast.
That's what it is. It's like I did that 20 mile on Monday, and I was like, I've not even done 1 mile at marathon pace. So,
sorry, mate. I'll let you carry on about the fueling. Sorry, it's just that's mind blowing.
It is, yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I did the fueling. Typically, we're looking at most runners would look to do 80 grams of carbs in an hour. And NN is sponsored by Morton, so we have that connection there. So I'm using Morton products. Stay away from the gels, I'm just using the drinks. And I was actually, it wasn't by accident, but when I started fueling myself, a standard Morton bottle, I'd put in a 320 and then I'd dump in a 160 on top. So that's pretty much like, that's a lot of carbs. and I was actually absorbing it really well and not getting any stomach issues. So we kind of tried when I was doing the testing to do 90 grams per hour instead of 80 grams per hour. And the body responded really well. We got some great numbers. I think that was because I was putting a lot of carbs in that bottle when I was out training, just loading it up, and
just
the numbers we got were really good. So we're gonna go for a high amount of carbs, like higher than most other athletes probably on the start line. And the body's actually took it on really well. So I'm excited for that. And yeah, the testing staff were all pretty excited to see the numbers off something they've not tested before.
And with your history of injuries of late, and you said about the importance of treatment, I know that strength and conditioning is such an important part of your training, but also for a lot of runners. Will that change at all when you're training for the marathon, or has it changed at all, or do you just continue what you were doing because it's worked well?
Yeah, it has changed in the sense from when I left the setup in the US. I'm working with MJ, a guy at British Athletics based in Loughborough. And I go and check in with him, and we've done testing in the past and what I need to work on. So we've come up with a routine which kind of hits everywhere I feel it needs to. It's not, a lot of people don't like going to the gym because it's 90 minutes, 2 hours out of your day, but I can knock out my session in 45 minutes, just do it a couple of times a week. For me, it's those little things. It's the glue for my training. It sticks everything together and it keeps me in one piece. So, or hopefully it will now. Obviously, like I said, missing sessions here and there, it just kind of takes its toll and then injuries start to crop up. So it's a big change from what I was doing at Bowerman, but a change which was obviously needed for me. And obviously with the high demands of the mileage on the road and stuff, I feel like we should be good to go there.
So Mark, you've been, I wouldn't say lucky because you've earned it, but you've trained in some of beautiful locations around the world, America, Kenya, Gatwick, you know, some amazing places. Yeah. But where's the best place to train in the world for you?
For me, it would be St. Moritz. You've got the altitude stimulus. Obviously, it's not too high. So you can do some good training there. You can drop down and go on the track in Kiavenna if you need to, sea level pretty much. And it's always warm down there, so that's one benefit for that. And then for marathon stuff, endless trails. You've got hills if you need it. And just down from Kiavenna in the next town over, you've got Samaden, it's called. You've got an airport, which is, I think it's Europe's most expensive airport to fly into, something like that. It's pretty crazy. Just all these private jets are coming in if they want to. St. Moritz for a weekend, and obviously in the winter they all go skiing and stuff. So there's about a 5K loop around the airport, pancake flat on road, and yeah, it's just a marathon runner's dream pretty much, just doing your reps around there, and obviously long trails surrounding it if you want to go off-road a little bit as well. So I feel like St. Moritz has done good stuff for me in the past, and it's a place where I'll look to use a lot in the future as well.
Yeah, we had that answer a lot of times before. People just seem to something in the air at St. Moritz, maybe literally, because obviously the best athletes in the world do train there. So, if you was to meet a beginner runner, Mark, in fact, no, not a beginner runner, any runner, how would you say to them, okay, this is how you improve at distance running? What are the fundamentals? So, if you're listening, listeners, get your notepad out, because 12:57 5K man and potential Olympic qualifier in the marathon is about to give you the gems.
For me, there's two key components, really, and these will sound probably counterintuitive, but strength is your best friend. You can never be strong enough. So I'm not going to say to young kids, go and run 100 miles a week, because that's stupid. But if you can be consistent at what you're doing, and even just go out and run long, but if it's slow, that's totally fine. You don't need to be going knocking 6 minute miling or whatever it may be, to develop the aerobic side of things. And then for me, like I said, it sounds stupid, but the speed is something. If you want to be successful on the track, you've got to have speed. And I feel like you can lose speed very, very quickly. So it's always important to keep in tune with that. So, yeah, I guess I'm saying go and run long and slow, but at the same time, within the week, at least once a week, get a hit out of some good 30-second efforts and stuff on the if it's on the track, then get some good 200s, 150s in. Just even if it's at the end of, if you want to do it at the end of like that longer run, I think those two complement one another as well. The stronger you get, the faster you'll get. So I feel like those are my two key components for the fundamentals for running quick.
Love that, love that. So today's podcast is sponsored by Coros, who I know support you, Mark, and we've been working with for a little while. We're flying out to Valencia Marathon this weekend to capture a couple of their athletes. In terms of data, I don't want to make you sound like a dinosaur, Mark, because you're not old by any means, but you've been a professional athlete now for some time. You've done the circuit, so data is something that you would have dealt with for a long time now. How do you currently use data from your Coros watch and the app to help you improve ultimately?
Yeah, I feel like it seems data's been around for a long time, but it doesn't really seem like a lot of people are too interested in it. Obviously, now with lactate testing and yeah, even just things like the Coros data on the app and on the watch, like something simple as how many hours of sleep you're getting and what type of quality are you getting within that sleep for the night. To me, I wasn't a big data guy in the past, but I feel like now with science moving forward, that this Coros have done a great job of making things simple on their platform, but also making it very accessible for the user. So and very informative if you want it to be. So for me, a big thing I've been is the sleep. That's a big thing for me. I need 9 hours, and if I don't get it, I can definitely tell. So for me, that's one thing. And then even just as of late, heart rate is a big thing as well. And with the new the heart rate monitor on the arm instead of round the chest is a big thing for me as well. So two things which yeah have I've been looking into is heart rate a bit more on with the strap on the arm, and yeah, ensuring my sleep is quality.
And the training hub that Coros offers is so comprehensive. I think I've used different brands over the years, but Coros just seems to be almost a running coach on your wrist and on your iPhone after training. But do you ever use the training hub at certain times of the season when maybe you're peaking for a race, or I don't know, in the past when you've worked with coaches, is there any key metrics that you're looking at? Obviously the pace and the splits, but anything that
Right.
you're thinking, do you know what? Look, this is telling me that I'm in shape and ready to race.
Yeah, I think like you said, with that hub on there, in the past I was a Timex guy. I didn't have all this fancy stuff on my wrist. I just ran for time, didn't know how many miles I run, didn't know my heart rate, and I feel like you become into this like false sense of security where you see everyone else kind of doing big stuff on if it's on Strava or whatever it may be, and you've got nothing to upload, and you kind of want to feel like you're involved a little bit, and you want people to know you are training hard, and you couldn't do that with a Timex. So that is a good thing about it, and like you said, yeah, with the metrics I look at, I think the training load is a big one for me. Just the accumulation within that 7 day period. I don't want to see huge jumps from 1 week to another. I want the training load to be somewhere similar. And then like the performance metric, if you are coming into a race, it's nice to see the watch telling you are in good shape, and it knows you are ready to run well. And I think that's just something in the back of the mind which can help as well.
And you said about the sleep quality being important for you, and we hear sleep is so important for recovery. It's kind of always been the number one thing that people are trying to improve. How do you use you know, looking at the data and the numbers for your sleep, and that you've got the deep sleep and your lighter sleep and then your sleep quality as a whole, do you ever, I don't want to make it sound like, do you ever freak out and be like, oh my God, I'm not sleeping very well, or I'm not recovered, etc. But do you ever kind of change the training that you're doing, or change the way that you're recovering, or incorporate anything into your week or your training month to say, right, I actually need to make a conscious effort to improve my recovery for the next 1-2 weeks because I've got X race or big session coming up or anything like that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just getting that 9 hours. And like I said, if I haven't had 9 hours, I know about it. And I can definitely tell on my runs, like if it's a morning run, obviously a double, and I haven't had 9 hours, I do feel a little different in that morning run. And it's not something I want to put a lot of emphasis on necessarily, but for me, I've got 9 hours. I know I'm going to feel good, and I'm going to deliver some good sessions. So I don't try and overlook it by any means, but it's just small things like that which can make a massive difference in training. So it wouldn't be necessarily I'll push paces back of a session if I've not slept 9 hours, or whatever it may be, if it's 6 or 7 for a normal person. But yeah, I would, if I felt a little different, I'd probably be like, okay, I didn't sleep well last night or for a couple of nights in a row, and try and make a conscious effort to change that.
And in the past, Mark, you said you were using Timex. I don't know if you go back even more years before that time when you was out in America. I mean, it's classic, isn't it? You know, when we're at university, we're not always the most model athletes, you know, just kind of rolling out of bed and going for a run. But how would you say that technology on your wrist through the Coros watch, but also monitoring your training a little bit further, has helped you not just become a more efficient runner, but a better runner?
Yeah, for me, it's, I would say for other people, for me, it's not necessarily the case, but a lot of people look for Strava to get that run in, and because they don't want to miss a night and not upload to Strava. So that, I feel like it sounds stupid, but if that's what gets you out the door, then that's good. And that's what technology is allowing people to do, is to get out and showcase that they've been out and done this run or done this session. But for me, it is all those little things added together, the sleep, the heart rate, and all these little things which do enhance one as an athlete. Because, I mean, there's a lot of science, it's backed by science, and that's kind of what's taken over running at the minute, all these double thresholds. And there's a lot of things moving forward which show if you do this, you will become better. So to me, it's like, it's a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you want that little extra piece of technology on your wrist to enhance yourself as an athlete?
And final question on Coros, Mark, what's your watch face right now?
My watch face is, you know, the two, it's the Ekiden one from Japan with the two handing over the baton to one another. That's my current one at the minute.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Good choice. I wonder after Seville, maybe they'll create a Mark Scott watch face.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes first.
Nice one, mate. Okay, so we're going to finish this interview off, Mark, with our quick fire questions. We ask these questions to all of our guests. So just throw the first thing that comes into your mind. No pressure, okay? So number one, if you had a magic wand, what is one thing that you'd change in athletics?
I would get rid of super shoes.
Wow. That's the first time someone said that, and I like this. We're gonna have to delve into this. Why would you get rid of super shoes?
I feel just because, not, let's say maybe I want to run 12:57, I didn't have the shoes, but I feel because there's so much like noise around them, not a lot of people kind of know what they're really capable of at the minute, and it would be good to just get rid of them and see if people would train the same without them, and if they could run the same times.
Get rid of super shoes, get rid of VAR and football. Let's make it more wholesome.
VAR doesn't even help at the minute anyway, does it? So
That's very true. What's the best thing about being a professional athlete?
Just having freedom and being able to kind of travel the world and train in a lot of beautiful locations.
And flip side, what's the worst thing about being a professional athlete?
Maybe running 120 miles a week.
Yeah, that does sound like a lot of graft, mate. Blimey, yeah. You just must get used to just being knackered.
Yeah, all the time. It's kind of a constant feeling. And like sleep's a big thing for me. That's why I need 9 hours so I can run that amount of miles.
What's the harsh truth that the running world needs to hear?
The harsh truth. That natural talent doesn't always take you to the top, I would say.
Print that on a t-shirt. Love that. That's good. And last question, Mark. In 10 years' time, what is one thing that you would have liked to have achieved in your life?
An Olympic medal.
Oh, okay. Nice, nice, nice. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today. And best of luck at Ribble Valley 10K, I should say, and Telford. And full steam ahead to Seville. Thank you for joining us this week for another episode of the Trackster podcast, where we talk all things running, the highs, the lows, the ugly bits, and everything in between. Big thank you to our guest, Mark, for his time on the show today. And if you have enjoyed today's listen, please do leave us a review and head over to our Instagram at Trackster to keep up to date with everything that we're up to. I've been Lloyd, your host for the day. I'll catch you down the road for a run and a chat. But in the meantime, have a great week.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.